Welcome to Bigelow Hall on the campus of the University of Louisville for tonight's political debate sponsored by WHAS-TV and the University of Louisville. Tonight's debate will be between the candidates for U.S. Senate. I'm Mark Hebert. I'm from the University of Louisville. I'm the Director of Media Relations, and I am going to be moderating this debate. We also have four reporters who will be asking questions of the candidates. Reporters are Joe Arnold, the political editor from WHAS-TV, Joe Girth, political writer and columnist for the Louisville Courier-Journal, Greg Stottlemyre, who covers government and politics for WTVQ-TV in Lexington, and Gene Burke, the anchor and managing editor for WBKO-TV in Bowling Green. The reporters will be asking questions of the two candidates, Democrat Jack Conway and Republican Rand Paul. Now, we do have a live audience here in Bigelow Hall. They've been asked to refrain from applauding until after each candidate's closing statement. We've told the candidates the moderator has a little bit of leeway here, so if they don't answer the questions to the satisfaction of these reporters, they'll be allowed to ask some follow-ups. And if they believe that their opponent has said something about them that they need to respond to, I'll give them a little leeway on that, too. Now, a coin toss before the debate was won by Jack Conway. He has elected to go first in the opening statement. Rand Paul had the second option and has chosen to go last in the closing. You each have 90 seconds for your opening statements. Mr. Conway, you're first.
Well, thank you, Mark, and thank you to the University of Louisville and to WHAS for hosting us here tonight. Elections are about choices, and this one is a choice between right and wrong. As your Attorney General, I've taken on the issue of drugs and crime. Rand Paul has said that drugs aren't a pressing matter in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Rand Paul is wrong. As your Attorney General, I've looked out for seniors when people would try to scam them or take advantage of them. Rand Paul has said that seniors need a $2,000 deductible for Medicare. Rand Paul is wrong. As your Attorney General, I've taken on the pharmaceutical companies when they lied to us about the price of drugs and took on the oil companies when they gouged us. Rand Paul would not let the government hold them accountable in any way whatsoever and has even gone so far as to say that going after BP is, quote, un-American. Rand Paul is wrong. But what worries me the most is that Rand Paul is on record as saying that we haven't followed the Constitution in this country since 1937. And 1937 is not picked randomly. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the year that the Supreme Court of the United States upheld the constitutionality of Social Security. In addition to that, Rand Paul would question the constitutionality of minimum wage laws, federal law enforcement, college loans, worker safety protections, and mine safety regulations. In fact, Rand Paul would undo all of the basic protections we've had since the 1930s. Count on me to stand up for you, and count on me to stand up for Kentuckians. I humbly ask for your vote on November the 2nd.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Conway. Dr. Paul?
People have asked me if I've enjoyed running for public office, and most days I'd say yes, but recently it's turned ugly. Most of you who know me as a pro-life Christian. I won't apologize for that. I've never written or said anything to indicate otherwise. I'm disheartened that my opponent has chosen to attack my religious beliefs. We have serious problems in our country. We have to have a serious discussion, and he's descended into the gutter to attack my Christian beliefs. I believe that those who choose the politics of personal destruction disqualify themselves from consideration. I believe that those who stoop to the level of attacking a man's religious beliefs to gain higher office, I believe that they should remember that it does not profit a man to gain the world if he loses his soul in the process. If you wish to be considered for higher office, if you wish to enter into the debate, step up, cast aside these attacks on my personal religion. Jack, you should be ashamed of yourself. You should apologize. Have you no decency? Have you no shame?
May I address that, Mark?
No, we're going to move on. You'll get your chance here in a second.
All right.
Now, here's the way it's going to work tonight. The moderator will be asking questions that have been submitted by WHAS-TV viewers and by the folks here in the room. So I will ask the first question. It'll go to Jack Conway. And my suspicion is you might use some of your time to answer Mr. Paul. Mr. Conway, are you in favor or opposed to the Supreme Court decision that allows unlimited corporate dollars in the election process, and why do you hold that position? Goes to you first, 60 seconds. Dr. Paul, you will have 60 seconds as
well. First of all, I'm opposed to that decision, but I do have to answer the charges that Rand Paul made in his opening statement. You know, Mark, values matter, and I think Rand Paul has two questions to answer here tonight. You know, the president of Baylor University, before he went to college there, banned a group. He banned them because they, quote unquote, were making fun of Christianity and Christ. Why did he freely join a group known for mocking or making fun of people of faith? And secondly, when is it ever a good idea to tie up a woman and ask her to kneel before a false idol, your god that you call Aqua Buddha? Those are two fundamental questions I hope we get answered here tonight. Now, to your question, I oppose it, because at Citizens United, if we don't do something about it in the United States Senate, your politicians are going to start looking like NASCARs. I mean, there's a bunch of special interest money, undisclosed, coming in here attacking me right now. I think we need to look at this issue of how does a corporation speak and make certain that the corporate special interests don't start buying off their politicians.
Dr. Paul, 60 seconds. Favor or oppose the Supreme Court ruling?
I favor the ruling. You know, Jack, you know how do we tell when you're lying? It's when your lips are moving, okay? You're accusing me of crimes. Do you know nothing about the process? You're going to stand over there and accuse me of a crime for 30 years ago from some anonymous source? How ridiculous are you? You embarrass this race. You are going to accuse me of a crime from 30 years ago? You really have no shame, have you? Do you want to discuss the issues of the day? The issues of the day, discuss your support for Obamacare. But let's not let this degenerate into calling me names and accusing me of crimes from 30 years ago from anonymous sources. I mean, really, have you no shame?
Give you 15 seconds to respond, Mr. Conway, and I'm going to give you 15 seconds more, Mr. Paul.
He still hasn't answered the two fundamental questions. Why did he join a group that was known for mocking Christianity and Christ? Why did he join it? It's apparent from Mr. Green in today's paper that he joined it, that they reveled in sacrilege. And values matter. And when is it ever appropriate to tie up a woman and ask her to kneel before a false god that you called Aqua Buddha?
Okay, that's time. 15 seconds. Go ahead, Mr. Paul. Dr. Paul.
How do you respond to a guy who's going to quote somebody anonymously from 30 years ago that's untrue? You just out and out lie because you have nothing to stand on. Run a race as a man. Stand up and be a man instead of just calling me names.
Okay. All right, we're going to move on. Joe Arnold has the first question for Dr. Paul.
Dr. Paul, Kentucky is home to GM, Ford, and Toyota plants, as well as suppliers to those automakers. In a recent interview, you agreed with the statement that the country would be in better shape if GM would have been allowed to fail rather than be bailed out. If GM's failure, however, would have threatened the other automakers of Kentucky, Ford and Toyota, because they share the suppliers, would you still be in favor of letting GM fail and whatever effect that would have on the other automakers of Kentucky?
I would probably characterize it a little differently. I would say that nobody wants GM to fail. Nobody wants Ford to fail. Nobody wants any business to fail. And so I'm not in favor of any businesses failing. What I would say is that when the economics of it show that you are going bankrupt, that there is something to be said for organized bankruptcy. What happened and what President Obama did in this is that he stole money basically from the Indiana teachers' pension and gave it to the union workers. The teachers' pension was in a what you call a bondholder that was a preferred bondholder. By the government coming in and overtaking this process and having a bankruptcy that was outside the normal bankruptcy rules, they basically took money from people who were owed money. Bankruptcy also causes efficiencies to occur. Through bankruptcy, they would have become a more efficient process. Fruit of the Loom went bankrupt in my town. I wasn't for it, but out of that bankruptcy, they became more efficient, and Warren Buffett bought them.
Jack Conway, 30 seconds.
Well, I wouldn't want to see GM go bankrupt. I wouldn't want to see the auto workers in and around Bowling Green go through that. I wouldn't want to see Ford go bankrupt. I wouldn't want to see the auto workers in and around Louisville go through that. But moving forward, this is really about who has a jobs plan for the future. I have a plan. My opponent does not. My opponent's plan is he said that we're going to need to have our people get jobs with lower wages, and they need a little tough love. You know, that's not a jobs plan. Go to my website at jackconway.org. Look at our hometown tax credit. Estimates are to create 11,000 jobs here in the Commonwealth of Kentucky.
Joe Girth, question for Mr. Conway.
Yes, General Conway, part of your job as Attorney General is to intervene on behalf of Kentucky citizens when utility companies ask for rate increases. But at the same time that you were doing this, you were also accepting contributions from people tied to some of these same utilities. the Executive Branch Ethics Commission cleared you of charges, but some would still argue that it was not smart politically to do this, and it also doesn't pass the smell test. How can voters be sure that you're going to be representing them instead of the utilities?
Well, the proof's in the pudding, Joe. The fact of the matter is that since I've become Attorney General, I have saved the ratepayers of this state well over $100 million and opposed the recent increases for LG&E and KU and AEP. And so I've stood up for the ratepayers of Kentucky, and I've stood up for electricity rates in Kentucky. I've opposed cap and trade, and cap and trade is now dead in the United States Congress, and I'm glad to see that. But when the administration went forward and tried to do it administratively, I actually stepped up and filed a lawsuit against the EPA to make certain that they wouldn't do that. But Joe, back to your original point, the Ethics Commission did take a look at this issue. They dismissed it. These have been scurrilous charges that are brought back up by Karl Rove and all this special interest, undisclosed money coming in from out of state, pursuant to the Citizens United decision, and trying to attack my character. And the fact of the matter is, whether it's on taking on the pharmaceutical companies, keeping our utility rates low, taking on the oil companies that gouged us at the pump, I have an outstanding record as Attorney General that I'm very proud of.
Dr. Paul, 30 seconds.
Actually, it was Lieutenant Governor Dan Mangiardo who brought up these charges, your fellow Democrat, and he thought they were serious. He wasn't cleared of the charges. They just said they didn't have jurisdiction over the charges. It is a clear conflict of interest for him to have been taking this money while deciding the cases. It is very important. It is something that should be brought up. And I think really he hasn't completely explained himself on this.
You good, Joe? Greg Stottlemyre, question for Dr. Paul.
Dr. Paul, your supporters gravitated to you because you were seen as a straight shooter, not a typical politician. Yet you've been accused during this campaign of backtracking from comments you've made about Kentucky's drug problem to the national sales tax to a Medicare deductible. What do you say to those who believe you've changed to get elected?
Don't believe everything you read in the newspaper. A lot of my positions have been characterized by those who oppose me in two of the main newspapers in the state, so take it with a grain of salt. I've not changed any of my positions. I believe the bank bailout was a mistake. I think that our problem is a spending problem, not a revenue problem. I've said repeatedly throughout a year and a half, I favor many different tax reforms that would simplify the tax code, as long as they lower the rates on everyone. But I've also said priority needs to be given to balancing the budget. It's a spending problem, not a revenue problem. I don't think we've changed on any of this. My position on drugs was mischaracterized from the very beginning. I said that where drug funding comes from was not a pressing issue, but I never said that drugs weren't a pressing issue. I'm a physician, a father of three teenage boys. I'm very concerned with drugs, and I've gone around the state, talked to sheriffs about it, as well as visiting drug rehab programs.
Okay, Jack Conway, 30 seconds.
Yeah, as best I can tell, Rand Paul has had to backtrack from his position on civil rights, the 23% national sales tax, whether or not he made up 1,000 phantom dues-paying members of Kentucky Taxpayers United, his stance on federal mine safety laws, the $2,000 deductible for Medicare, whether or not drugs are a pressing issue, which he clearly said drugs are not a pressing issue, and 234 supposed dead agricultural recipients in Florida that he just made up. Rand, here's the thing. You don't have the guts to stand by your positions, because once you get out there and put them out there and you realize you can't sell them and get elected on them, you step back from them. You told me to stand up and be a man. Have the guts to stay by your positions.
Okay. Gene Burke, WBKO-TV, question for Mr. Conway.
Mr. Conway, if elected, what specifically will you do in your first 100 days in office to jumpstart the economy by creating jobs in Kentucky?
Well, I think jobs, Gene, are the number one issue in the Commonwealth right now. We're at 10% unemployment, and families are literally being ripped apart. I mean, parents are losing their jobs. They're afraid that they can't educate their kids. And so that's why it's so callous when my opponent says that sometimes workers just need to take lower wages and just have a little tough love. That's no jobs plan. I actually have a jobs plan. Go to our website at jackconway.org. It's called a hometown tax credit. I'd cap the program at $30 billion. And for small and medium-sized businesses that want to create a new job, they can take a 20% tax credit. Now, it's not going to solve all of our problems, but estimates are that it would create about 11,000 jobs here in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. I also want to get the small and community banks lending once again to the small and medium-sized businesses, because George W. Bush and Mitch McConnell, when they were there, bailed out a bunch of big banks up on Wall Street, and then the regulators came down really, really hard on our small and community banks, and it's that $200,000 or $300,000 loan that oftentimes is a lifeline for job creation. And finally, we need a top-to-bottom review of our trade deals because we've lost 100,000 manufacturing jobs in this state in the last decade.
Dr. Paul?
I think the first thing to understand is that government doesn't create jobs. Individual entrepreneurs and businessmen and women create jobs. Unless you understand that, you can't even begin the debate. The next thing you have to say is, let's keep more money in Kentucky. Let's send less money to Washington. The next thing you need to do is you need to have less regulations. Regulations cost business $1 trillion. We can't compete overseas because we overregulate, overtax, overburden. President Obama and his cronies are adding more regulation and burden. That's what we need to change.
Okay, next question comes from Teresa Harden, who's a student that's here tonight. She says, what are your plans to improve the quality of higher education in Kentucky? Dr. Paul, your first 60 seconds.
Well, I think the way we improve overall education in Kentucky is we need more control of education in Kentucky. You know, one of the things that when you talk to school superintendents or you talk to presidents of college, that they'll tell you is there's so many rules that come out of Washington that they can't make decisions here in the state about how to make education better. I think sometimes it's different by university to university. I want to allow more autonomy for presidents of universities, as well as all the way down the ladder when we talk about secondary education and primary education. Let's have more of the decision-making process here in the state and less mandates or unfunded mandates coming from the federal government.
Jack Conway?
Well, Mark, as you know, this is an issue I know very well. I worked on higher education reform when I worked with the governor's office in Frankfurt. And what Rand Paul didn't tell you is that he is for eliminating the Department of Education. You heard me right. He's for eliminating the Department of Education. And there are a lot of students in the room here tonight, a lot of students here in the room tonight who are on Pell Grants, Stafford loans. I mean, what are they going to do? Here's what I want to do for higher education. I want to keep students in school longer. The new bill that was passed that allows students to get loans directly from the federal government and then to repay it more slowly over time with a small percentage of their wages, that's going to work. That's going to keep students from having to drop out of college because they can't afford to pay for college. We ought to be doing more of that, but doing away with the Department of Education, that may sound easy, but it's going to have a really, really bad result. We need to stand up for higher education. We need to get people into our community and technical schools, into a system of higher education here, and we need to keep them in that system.
Joe Arnold, question for Mr. Conway.
General Conway, right out of the gate tonight, you brought up the commercial that you approved that questions Dr. Paul's faith. The announcer in that commercial asks four questions. Why? And I'm just curious, presumably there's an answer to that. Are you alleging that Dr. Paul is not a Christian or is not a good Christian?
And that's not the issue of the ad. The issue of the ad is that values matter. The issue of the ad is that values matter. The issue of the ad is why did Rand Paul, knowing that the president of Baylor University banned this group for being sacrilege, and because they quote-unquote made fun of Christianity and Christ, why did he knowingly join a group that was known for mocking people of faith? And then secondly, when is it ever appropriate to tie up a woman? When is it ever appropriate to tie up a woman and have her kneel before a false idol that you refer to as Aqua Buddha? Those are two fundamental questions. And if you look at Rand Paul's college years, the Washington Post had a story just this week talking about he made writings to the student paper of like, when are two people ever equal? Well, I think our creator made us equal at the outset. He asked questions about whether or not we should have protections for women, protections against discrimination. You know, these have popped up as his positions here this summer and this fall. And so there's a direct line between what he was writing about in college and the positions he's taken on deductibility and faith-based programs, et cetera.
Time. Rand Paul, 30 seconds.
Let me get this straight. Jack wants to know, well, when did you quit beating your wife? You know, it's like, you've accused me of these crimes, and why did you commit these crimes that you just completely have made up, Jack? Do you know nothing about the process of accusation? Do you know nothing about the fact that when you attack someone's character, you don't just do that. You don't just make up stuff that you attack someone's character, Jack. I mean, you really should be ashamed of yourself. Run on the issues of the day, but don't make up stuff about me from college that you think you've read on the internet blogs, okay?
Time.
Grow up.
Time. Jack Conway, do you want to respond?
I do want to respond.
It was 30 seconds.
It wasn't on the internet blogs. It was on CBS News. It was on Politico. It's been in... It's been in Politico. It's been in the Lexington Herald Leader. And the woman who you tied up said that, in talking about it again, said that it was weird that she ended her friendship with you because of it. And I just don't think that anyone should ever tie up a woman and ask her to kneel before a false idol.
30 seconds, Rand Paul, then we'll move on.
I give up. How do you argue with somebody who has no logic and makes no logical sense, who makes up stuff to accuse me of from 30 years ago in college? I mean, it is absolutely absurd
to even have a
conversation with you. You demean the state of Kentucky. You embarrass yourself to bring up stuff from 30 years ago that is untrue, unsubstantiated, that you read on a blog.
I think Joe quit. No applause, folks. Mr. Paul's supporter, as we told you beforehand, no applause during this event. Let's give our respect to both the candidates. Thank you very much. Joe Arnold has a follow-up.
My question is to be clear. Do you think that he's a Christian or a good Christian? Because you're asking that question, why? What is your conclusion?
I don't have a conclusion about it. I know that his wife is a deacon in their church, and I don't think that's the issue. The issue is that why did he join a group? Why did he join a group that mocked people of faith that was known for? Did you not join a group that was known for mocking people of faith, Randy?
That you say.
30 seconds, Mr. Paul. Do you need time or not?
How can you respond to anonymous accusations from a guy who wants to make up stuff about me being in college? Are we going to debate? Let's have a debate tonight about some national issues.
Okay.
If you want to go back and discuss with your high school buddies what went on in high school and college, you do it. But let's have a debate about Obamacare. Do you support your president or do you not? Or can all you do is make up accusations about me in college? That shows such a dearth of knowledge and such a dearth of positions that really disqualifies you from holding office.
All right, let's move on. Joe Girth has a question for Dr. Paul.
Dr. Paul, from the past three debates, General Conway has said he does not believe that you think Social Security is constitutional. So I'll give you a chance to answer that question. Do you believe it is?
Well, no, I've never said that it's not constitutional. I have questioned the constitutionality of Obamacare, and so have 17 attorneys general. 70% of Kentucky challenges and believes that we should challenge the constitutionality of Obamacare. Attorney General will not sign on to that. We've asked him repeatedly. I was there in the Capitol with 300 people to ask him to sign on to challenge the constitutionality of Obamacare. This is a pressing issue of the day. This would get us into some discussion of the issues here. Jack misunderstands the Constitution. He thinks it has to list a right that you not have insurance. He doesn't understand that the Constitution gives certain powers to the government, but it says those rights not listed are not to be disparaged. The Ninth and Tenth Amendment are very clear. There needs to be a rereading of those. He needs to join the lawsuit against Obamacare. He needs to do the will of the people. Over 70% of Kentuckians do think Obamacare was a mistake.
30 seconds.
Well, Mark, I'm always amused, as the Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Kentucky, I'm always amused to get a lecture in constitutional law from a self-certified ophthalmologist. So,
folks, come on.
You know, I'm not going to waste the resources of the taxpayers of Kentucky playing Tea Party politics. If you were to go back and file one of these lawsuits, what you'd be doing, you're challenging well-settled law that says that Social Security and Medicare is constitutional. If you listen to Rand Paul's answer very carefully, he did not say he thinks Social Security is constitutional. He does not think it's constitutional, I'm telling you.
Time's up. Joe Girth, follow up.
Yes or no? Is it constitutional or not?
I've never challenged it and do not challenge
not,
the constitutionality of it. Yes, it's been decided law since the 30s. The thing is it's hard to argue with him because he makes up my positions and then I have to go ahead and have a debate with a made-up position. Even the Lexington Herald has said repeatedly his ads are false. How do you debate with a guy who makes up all your positions? It's very difficult.
I'll give you another 30 seconds, Jack Conway.
I'm not making any positions up. They're on the internet. They're in emails between dueling campaign managers. They're in your press releases. You know, if you want to talk about ads being declared false, you're talking about this issue of utilities. The Lexington Herald leader said that the ad that your group, American Crossroads, is running against me is decidedly false. You know, it's a public service commission that actually sets the rates, not the attorney general. So Notice once again, when you're debating around Paul, what he'll say is, oh, it's settled law, it's this. He has written on this. He's brought out dates like 36, 37. He doesn't think federal mine safety laws are constitutional because they're based on the Commerce Clause. So he's pretty clear in his positions on this.
WTVQ-TV's Greg Stottlemyre has a question for Jack Conway.
The Lexington Herald Leader, in endorsing you today, said that you have, quote, built a commendable record of public service, but there is a mood in this country that many are ready to turn away from those with track records in government and politics. Your response to that?
That I haven't been in Washington. I've been the Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Kentucky for the last 3 years, and a darn good one. Since becoming the Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Kentucky, I've taken on the oil companies that gouged us at the pump. I've taken on the pharmaceutical companies that lied to us. And Rand Paul may talk about balancing the whole federal budget next year, and he's not going to tell anyone how he's going to do it this year, but you're looking at a fiscally responsible Democrat. I've balanced my budget 8 times. I've cut 30% in spending from the Office of the Attorney General. Despite doing that, despite having to do that, I've taken 86,000 child porn images off of the internet because I believe in accountability. We went after the pharmaceutical companies, and Medicaid fraud collections are up over 600%. Because I understand drugs are indeed a pressing issue, I created the state's first prescription pill task force and have worked with Congressman Hal Rogers on the prescription pill issue in eastern Kentucky. And abuse and neglect prosecutions are up over 300%. I think that's a record. I'm taking a public office and treating it as a public trust, and that's exactly what I'm going to do when I go to the United States Senate.
Dr. Paul?
I think this is and will be the year of the outsider. I think people are ready for some non-career politicians. I think people are ready for term limits. I think people are ready for a balanced budget amendment. And I think they're ready for people who don't see their future and see things in terms of having their career and staying there forever. They see people who say, you know what? We have serious problems in our country. We have a $2 trillion deficit. People are worried about their country, and they want to send somebody up there who's not been part of this system.
Gene Burke, question for Rand Paul.
Dr. Paul, should employers be held accountable for hiring illegal immigrants or undocumented workers, and why or why not?
Yes, and I think illegal immigration is a big problem in our country. I think we need to have security along the southern border, and we haven't done a very good job of it, Republican or Democrat. And so I think security is what we have to do first. Many, like my opponent, want amnesty and security, they say, but we've tried that in the past. Whenever they've offered us and said, oh, we'll give you amnesty and we'll get you security at some point in time, doesn't happen. I think it's a real national security problem to have an open border. I agree with Milton Friedman, who said you can't have open borders in a welfare state. Arizona is trying to do something because the federal government's not stepping up. He opposes the Arizona law. I'm for the Arizona law. I think that states will have to do something. They're the ones spending the money on education and health benefits for people breaking the law. I think you cannot allow people to willy-nilly break the law and come into the country by millions and millions. I'm in favor of legal immigration, but that's the way it needs to be.
Jack Conway?
Well, let me correct the record. I'm not for amnesty. I'm also not for Rand Paul's plan that he came out with this summer, where he wants to electrify the entire southern border of the United States of America and build an underground electric fence. That doesn't seem workable to me. Now, as the Attorney General of Kentucky, we advise law enforcement agencies about immigrations and customs enforcement holds, and what I've realized is there aren't enough agents. The federal government has completely abrogated its responsibility in this area. If I go to Washington, I want to work on a system that's tough, sensible, and fair.
Gene Burke has a follow-up. Go ahead.
Do you favor a temporary guest worker program?
Yes.
Mr. Paul first. Sorry.
Yes, I do. I think a temporary worker program is a good program. I think it should be done legal. It should be documented. And I think when you talk to most in the farming community, they will tell you that they do need the migrant workers to work on the farms.
Jack Conway?
I do think a temporary worker program, if done properly in conjunction with tough border security and a system that's sensible and fair, does make some sense. I also support trying to streamline the H-2A program through the United States Department of Agriculture to get some of the temporary workers to the farms where they can do some work that's desperately needed. So in certain instances like that where it's proven to work, I do support it.
This is a question from a WHAS-TV viewer. There is much controversy on both sides of the fence about the current health care reform bill. We don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater because there are many benefits in the current bill. So what specifically would you keep, what would you do away with, and what would you replace those portions with? Jack Conway, 60 seconds.
Well, Thank you very much for the question. I tell you what's not the answer for healthcare is a $2,000 deductible for Medicare. Rand Paul has said that he wants a $2,000 deductible for Medicare. Our seniors simply cannot afford it. And he's also come out and said that we need to take all breast cancer research down to the local level. That's an issue where here at U of L, they get millions of dollars in breast cancer research funding. Jane Beshear got so hopping mad that she jumped on a conference call to tell everyone how upset she was about it. Here's what we need. We need to fix the healthcare law. Rand Paul wants to repeal it. You know, I have a friend who had a kidney transplant. He's had this kidney for about 18 years. And he's told me on numerous occasions how hard it is to get coverage because he has a pre-existing condition. You know, we've got 19,000 kids in this state that are going to be kept on their parents' plan longer. There's some good things in the healthcare law. What we need to do is to step up in Medicare and allow Medicare to negotiate for lower drug prices. That would save $200 billion. You need someone with a track record of taking on the pharmaceutical companies in order to do that.
60 seconds.
I'd get rid of the whole thing and start over. They went in the wrong direction. I'd get rid of the individual mandates. I'd get rid of the fines. I'd get rid of the 1099 provisions. Interestingly, while we've talked a lot about the deductible, or someone has, Obamacare did raise the deductible on those on Medicare already. So while I was talking about in the future we might have to, Jack's already in favor of raising the deductible. So's President Obama. They've already done it.
That's wrong.
Medicare Advantage already will have people paying nearly $1,000 more in out-of-pocket costs, and deductibles will rise under Obamacare. So don't be fooled.
Jack Conway, I'm going to let you respond, but I also want to know, the viewer asked, what specifically would you do away with in the health care bill? So answer that, and then you can respond to
okay.
Mr. Paul.
Well, I think that this argument that he has come up with to try to get himself out from under the seven different times that he said he was for a $2,000 deductible in Medicare, he came up with an argument in Paducah the other day that somehow a deductible is already being raised. Joe Girth of the Courier took a look at this and debunked that pretty thoroughly in a story this week. Here's what I would do away with. I would say this special interest provision where Medicare cannot negotiate for lower drug prices, which is $200 billion in savings, I think we ought to let Medicare negotiate for lower prices the way Medicaid does, the way the VA does. We also need Medicare fraud units in each and every state the way that we have them in Medicaid.
Okay, 30 seconds.
Actually, I read Joe Girth also all the time. And in Joe Girth's article, he quotes Richard Foster, actuary from CMS, to say, under Obamacare, deductibles will go up. You're absolutely incorrect on this.
Joe Arnold, question for Dr. Paul.
Dr. Paul, as you know, Kentucky is a net importer of federal dollars. You argue certainly for a different taxation system. You want more money kept at home, less money sent and filtered through Washington. But let's say you win and you're able to convince everybody in the Senate and the Congress of your plan. Is the net result for Kentucky going to be a lesser percentage of the federal pie?
All right. Actually, I think the statistic, if you take out those active military salaries and what we give to our bases, our numbers are disproportionately high because of having two big military bases and having a lot of active duty salaries in our state. You take that out, I don't think we get more than we send to Washington. Washington's a net loser for us, and we need to say it's a $2 trillion deficit. We need to figure out how to fix it, and that will require cuts across the board. We will have to look at every program and say, how do we balance this? We won't look at our soldiers, and that's why the soldiers should be taken out of the equation.
Jack.
Well, Joe, in Paducah the other day, Rand Paul came out for a 23% national sales tax. That would be on top of our regular sales tax. It's his plan. He wants to do away with the 16th Amendment and put in place this 23% national sales tax. So when you go to buy groceries, or you go to buy medicines, or you go to buy supplies, you're paying a 23% national sales tax. It raised taxes on 90% of the people, and it would come down disproportionately hard on our seniors. And these are the seniors that would also get Rand Paul's $2,000 Medicare deductible. They just simply can't afford his plan.
I've said repeatedly that we have a spending problem, not a revenue problem. We need to cut spending before we do anything to taxes. But you know what? We do need to simplify the tax code. It's 16,000 pages long. We need to simplify it, make it shorter. And I will support and do support many different approaches to reform the tax code as long as it reduces the overall burden for all taxpayers.
I got 15 seconds, Jack Conway. You want to respond or not?
Well, he's been for the national sales tax repeatedly. He said he was for it again, 23% in Paducah, and then his campaign managers, one former and one current, got an argument about it this week. And the bottom line is a 23% national sales tax would really hurt our seniors in addition to the $2,000 Medicare deductible that he's for.
Okay, Joe Girth from the Courier Journal, question for General Conway.
General Conway, in the past 9 years, some 1,300 Americans have died in Afghanistan. The conditions on the ground there seem to be at times deteriorating. Do you believe this is a winnable war? How would you define that being a winnable war? And under what circumstances should we leave?
Well, that's a very good question. Thank you for it, Joe. Our men and women in uniform are serving so bravely over there. And I think it was the right thing to go in and displace the Taliban. But here's an instance of me breaking with the administration and being an independent-minded Kentucky Democrat. I questioned the surge in Afghanistan. I did so because I'm sick of hearing these politicians bang on the wood and say, win the war, win the war. What does it mean to win the war in Afghanistan? I think it means, simply stated, that we leave a country more stable than we found it and one that doesn't harbor terrorists, sparing us ill will. And the reason I questioned the surge was because I didn't hear enough about Pakistan. You know, Pakistan is the neighbor that harbors the deadly combination of loose nuclear material and terrorists. And so we have to have a regional solution, and we have to handle this issue of nuclear proliferation. And this issue of nuclear proliferation is why I'm especially troubled that he has said that it's not a national security threat to the U.S. if Iran acquires one nuclear weapon. We have to be mindful of this.
Dr. Paul?
I've told people that if I am elected to the Senate, the most important vote I will ever take is on going to war. I think America should go to war reluctantly, and when we go to war, we should declare war as the Constitution intended. I think we haven't done that, and as a consequence, we haven't been unified as a nation. I would have voted to declare war on Afghanistan. I do think we do need to begin asking questions about when can we come home, when can the Afghans step up and do more to patrol the streets in their country.
Okay. Jack Conway, I think Joe Girth has a follow-up, I believe.
So do you believe that it is a winnable war? And if not, or if so, how do we get out?
Well, I think that we can meet those two criteria that I put forward, and that is leaving a country more stable than we found it, and one that doesn't harbor terrorists that bear us ill will. But we're going to have to figure out a strategy that's an international strategy. The solution, Joe, is going to be a political one where countries like Pakistan and China and others step up, and our UN partners and NATO partners step up, so that we have an international solution to achieve the political ends that will allow us to get out in the near future.
Should there be a timeline?
Go ahead.
I would like to see our troops starting to come home sometime next year.
Rand Paul, 30 seconds.
I think that we are very good at fighting war, but we're not very good at nation building. I think we need to ask the questions about that. There needs to be a national debate in the Senate and in the halls of the media as well. We need to have a debate about when we should come home. I think ultimately the Commander-in-Chief makes those decisions, though, and I don't think that Congress can vote to move troops around. I think it actually would be unconstitutional for Congress to tell him he has to have 100,000 troops here or 100,000 troops there.
Greg Stottlemyre, question for Dr. Paul.
Dr. Paul, you've expressed local first when it comes to spending tax dollars, yet considering the corruption that has been rampant in parts of eastern Kentucky, do you believe sending massive amounts of tax dollars without federal control is the best way to attack our state's drug problem?
Well, the interesting thing, and I think this debate has been mistaken from the very beginning as if it's an all or none, there's a continuum between federal funding and local and state funding. But the interesting thing, if you talk to a sheriff in any county and ask them what percentage of your money is state and what percent and local and what is federal, it's well over 90% in every community is state and local funding. So it's funny that we're having this debate as if I'm proposing some dramatic change in what we do. What we do now is the vast majority of the funding is state and local.
Mr. Conway?
Well, I don't know what Kentucky he's looking at. I was interested to read the paper this morning to see that Hal Rogers, who I've actually worked with on Operation Unite, say that he was very disappointed in Rand Paul's stance when it came to funding Operation Unite. And I can assure you Operation Unite is not 90% federally funded. I can assure you that the Pennyroyal Area Task Force that Congressman Whitfield has brought funding home for is not locally funded. I can assure you that the sheriffs that I met with in Central Kentucky who say they would lose one or two full-time drug investigators under your plan are very concerned about it. Drugs are indeed a pressing issue in Kentucky.
Dr. Paul?
Well, let me explain this. Federal programs would be federally funded. They're 100% federally funded. But if you take the federal money in a county and you add up the local money in the county, it's less than 10% of the money. The sheriff's office in any county collects the vast majority of the money, and a very small percentage is federal. I want more autonomy with the local sheriff, and I want more autonomy with local drug courts because I want to make reasonable decisions. I don't think we should lock up a teenager for 10 years for possession of drugs. I think we need to have a more reasoned and reasonable approach to the drug problem.
30 seconds.
This is an issue that I understand, and it's an instance where I get Kentucky and Rand Paul doesn't get Kentucky. As the Attorney General, I've literally traveled through Eastern Kentucky and I've had parents cry on my shoulder because their children have overdosed from OxyContin. So for you to stand up and say that drugs aren't a pressing issue and say that you wouldn't seek federal assistance, I think it's callous, and I think it's problematic for the people of Eastern Kentucky, including the partnership that we have in the AG's office with local governments, with the federal governments. This is an all-hands-on-deck situation.
Okay, Gene Burke, question for Mr. Conway.
As a way to attack the deficit, you can either cut programs and save money or raise taxes to generate income. As far as Kentucky is concerned, what is your view on downsizing Fort Knox and Fort Campbell as a way to cut spending?
Oh, I'm not for that. I was in Fort Knox just the other day, meeting with the core group, and actually the Base Realignment Commission, BRAC down there, has a plan moving forward for Fort Knox. It's very exciting. They're actually going to triple the number of officers. There's incredible investment down there, and the people in and around Fort Knox are very excited for their future. And I was in Hopkinsville the other night, too, and they're certainly standing by Fort Campbell. I'm a fiscally responsible Democrat, Gene. I balance my budget 8 times, and if you go to my website, you'll see that we have very specific proposals for how we can trim about $500 billion in spending. First, we go to Medicare bulk purchasing, which saves about $200 billion. There's about $100 billion in Medicare fraud out there that we could get if we had Medicare fraud units in each and every state. And if we were to shut down the offshore tax loopholes and offshore tax havens that my opponent supports, there's about $130 billion in savings. We also need the pay-as-you-go system that President Clinton put in place, and we also need a bipartisan debt commission to get back to us with some recommendations.
Dr. Paul?
I'm not for cutting funds for Fort Knox or for Fort Campbell. Both of them are ranked in the top 20 bases that the military has decided are the top 20 most important bases. So I think we have a very good chance that Fort Knox and Fort Campbell will stay in Kentucky, and I'm in favor of that. With regard to what we do, it's a spending problem in Washington. You're going to need some serious people to go up there and look at every program across the board and say, can we downsize it? Can we make it smaller? Can we privatize some programs? But we have to be serious about this, and it's going to take serious people to balance the budget.
Okay, next question comes from an audience member. Robert Keller asks, where do you stand on the location of the new VA hospital for Louisville? Dr. Paul, you go first. 60 seconds.
Well, I think we should take into account where the veterans want to have it. I mean, the veterans are pretty much, from my understanding, for keeping it in the similar location to where it is. There's some in the medical community that think it would be more convenient to be downtown. But this would be an area where I would say what is consistent with my philosophy is let's make the decisions locally. Let's have the veterans input, people who live and come to it in this area. Let's have folks in Louisville make the decision. But let's not ship off and send that decision to Washington.
Jack Conway, 60 seconds.
It's an issue where this is one of the few issues I think where Dr. Paul and I may agree, actually. I think it, we should listen to the veterans community. We should listen to local elected officials. I want to talk with John Yarmuth about where he sees it going and look at the land acquisition issues. And we'll make a decision that's best for the veterans. In addition to that, in talking to my good friend John Sterner, who's been in my ear on numerous occasions, the north central part of the state is really underserved when it comes to veterans nursing homes. So I'd like to look at something in and around Fort Knox or in this part of the state where we could get a veterans nursing home, hopefully at an affordable cost, so that we can serve that underserved part of our veterans.
Joe Arnold, question for General Conway.
General Conway, you have said that your support of the Employee Free Choice Act is due to the fact that you think that if a majority of workers in a workplace want to organize, they should be able to sign cards to do that. I'm curious about another facet, though, of that same bill, which would force federal binding arbitration on businesses and unions, basically essentially a takeover of the contract process by the federal government. Do you agree with that facet of card check?
Well, Joe, thank you for the question. First of all, I've always said that it's a fundamental right of the American worker to sit down with his or her employer and to talk about the terms and conditions of their employment. And if 50% of people want to form a union, they ought to be able to form a union. And a situation where if a union is formed and you go on years and years and years and years and no contract is reached, there ought to be some sort of mediation process where they can sit down and hopefully arrive at a contract. But the larger issue here, Joe, is jobs. We need a jobs plan, and Rand Paul has no jobs plan. We have 10% unemployment in this state, and his jobs plan is to say that sometimes our workers are just going to have to take lower wages, and they need a little tough love. Well, that's no jobs plan. Again, I want folks to go to my website at jackconway.org, check out the hometown tax credit. You know, it's not going to solve all of our problems, but according to Moody's, it would create about 11,000 jobs in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. A lot of people are afraid that the government's growing and are not creating, and jobs aren't being created. I'm a different type of Democrat. We need to provide incentives to the private sector to create the jobs of the future.
Rand Paul, 30 seconds.
Let me interpret for you. He is for forced unionization bill, the Employee Free Choice Act, gets rid of the secret ballot. We'll have binding arbitration, which will supersede private contracts. Big mistake for Kentucky, will cause loss of jobs, not creation of jobs. The prevailing wage in Kentucky has lost jobs. It causes our schools to be more expensive. So be very clear what his position is. He is for the bill.
Journal.
And that's the follow-up. You said some sort of mediation. So the bill as written is this federally forced binding arbitration. Do you specifically support that?
What I would like to see is a mediation process after some period of time. If both sides can't agree, some sort of mediation process to ask them to sit down and arrive at a contract within a reasonable period of time.
Rand Paul?
My understanding is he will vote for the bill. I will vote against the bill. That makes it a little more simple, I think.
Okay. Joe Girth, question for Dr. Paul.
Yes, Dr. Paul, you've criticized Jack Conway for campaigning or raising money outside of Kentucky and challenged him to return his salary to the state for those days. Will you promise now that if elected, you will return to the federal government or give to a charity any pay that you earn on days when you are campaigning outside of Kentucky for either yourself or your father?
If skipping votes, yes. But you know, the interesting thing is he has been gone. He's gone over half of September in California with Nancy Pelosi raising money. And the thing is we want him to do his job here. He wants to blame the drug problem on me. I'm a small town physician in Bowling Green. I'm not responsible for the drug problem. He's the chief law enforcement officer of the state, and meth labs have doubled under his watch. Prescription drug problem is rising. All of the pressing nature to the drug issue should come back to him. He's the one in charge, for goodness sakes.
Go.
Well, it's interesting. As of our latest campaign finance report, I think more than 70% of my money was from in-state, and more than 70% of his was out of state. I don't think there's any question who Kentuckians are supporting. So it's another instance here. Rand Paul just doesn't think the rules apply to him. Look at this story this week about Kentucky Taxpayers United. He just made up, evidently, 1,000 dues-paying members. They didn't file their paperwork. He's been going around the state saying he's the head of the Kentucky Taxpayers United for the last 10 years, and there have been numerous stories this week that show that the organization didn't even exist. What was he doing there?
Hey, Joe Girth, had a follow-up.
Yeah, Dr. Paul, you said you would return money if you're missing votes. Do you view your job as a senator as being more than voting?
I think that's the primary job, and I think he should return his money because he's actually not doing his job. All of the problems that he's in charge of are getting worse, and he was out of state just about half of September traveling, trying to troll for cash in California. So, yes, I think he should return his.
I was not in California for half of September trolling for cash, I can assure you of that. And the ad you're talking about, meth, was declared false and was actually taken down by two stations where it was aired. So I have been a working attorney general. And you look at my record, I've taken on the pharmaceutical industry. Medicaid fraud collections are up over 600%. I've taken on the special interests. I've taken 86,000 child porn images off of the internet. Our new cyber crimes unit is training law enforcement officers all across the state. We've probably brought the state farther in the area of cyber crimes in the last few years than any other state in the country. I'm proud of that record.
Craig Stottlemyre, question for Jack Conway.
You have called your opponent a constitution minimalist with radical views. How can you defend the claim that Paul would dismantle Social Security, Medicare, mine safety regulations, the minimum wage, et cetera. Does that view, or does his views go too far? How can you defend that? I mean, you've gone all the way to saying he will dismantle those programs.
Well, Rand Paul's on record is saying that the federal defense budget will be much smaller, but he wants the federal defense budget to be 80 or 90% of the total budget. That's the future that he sees. He's on record as saying that we haven't followed the Constitution in this country since 1937. He said we haven't followed the proper avenue for mine safety since 1936. He said we need to go back to a pre-World War II system of healthcare where doctors negotiate directly with patients. In 1937, it's no accident, the Supreme Court upheld Social Security. In 1936, in a case called Carter Coal, the Supreme Court decided that the Commerce Clause was broad enough to regulate coal mine safety. And I'm glad they did, because we were losing 1,500 coal miners a year back in the 1930s. And during World War II, the Blue Cross Blue Shield system arose, and you had direct reimbursement for certain services. Rand Paul doesn't like that. He calls himself a constitutional conservative rather than a libertarian. He would take us back to a point where we don't have federal law enforcement, where we don't have mine safety laws, and we question the constitutionality of all these advances we've had since the 1930s.
Dr. Paul?
I think you've hit the nail on the head. He makes up positions, and then we argue made-up positions. I'm not for eliminating Social Security. I'm not for eliminating Medicare. And I'm not for eliminating mine safety regulations. So why don't you stop that so we can have an intelligent debate? The thing is we have to decide which direction to go, which regulations work, which don't work. We have to figure out how to fund Medicare and Social Security for the baby boomers. There are problems. We're living longer and there are more retired people. He says he's not for any changes ever to Medicare and Social Security. That won't work.
Jack Conway, you appear to be chomping at the bit, so I think I'm going to give you 30 seconds.
Well, I have outlined a couple of provisions here for Medicare. Going to bulk purchasing allows $200 billion in savings. Medicare fraud units allow about $100 billion in savings. There's significant savings right there. But, you know, he puts forward all this stuff. Social Security is a Ponzi scheme and ought to be privatized, and a $2,000 deductible. And I'm sick and tired of him putting forward policies that are so callous and calling them courageous. I want to tell the seniors of Kentucky tonight, I am never going to balance the budget on their backs.
Rand Paul, 30 seconds.
What was that you said? Never going to balance the budget?
On their backs.
Yeah. Never going to balance the budget.
On their backs.
The thing is we do have to figure out how to fund Social Security and Medicare. The baby boomers are going to retire. We have 42 million people retired now. We're getting ready to have 77 million people retired. We have to figure out how to fund it. It will ultimately mean changes for younger people and for wealthier people. If you don't believe that and you're not willing to have an adult discussion about it, then we get nowhere towards fixing it. The longer we put off fixing it, the worse the problem gets.
Last question, Gene Burke for Dr. Paul.
Dr. Paul, there's been much discussion at the federal level about creating less dependence on non-renewable energy sources like coal and oil. Do you favor such a move? And if you do, how do you explain that position to people working in Kentucky's coal industry?
All right. If elected, I'll probably be the biggest defender of the coal industry and the coal workers and the miners that we have in the United States, because it's a big Kentucky industry. It employs over 100,000 people. But the interesting thing is I'm not opposed to other forms of energy. I think we should keep developing other forms of energy. I'm in favor of nuclear. I'm in favor of wind. I'm in favor of hydroelectric. You name it, I'm in favor of it. The ultimate decisions, though, on which energy form is the best are determined by the marketplace. 300 million people in America get to vote every day. It's called democratic capitalism. We vote on what's sold at Walmart. We vote on whether Walmart succeeds or Target succeeds. We vote on whether we're going to use coal or nuclear. What we have is a marketplace that determines these, and the great thing about it is that maximizes the freedom of the individual to participate in what they get. But yes, I'm in favor of all forms of energy, but we will continue to burn coal, I would think, for several more generations.
Jack Conway, 30 seconds.
Sure. I think I just heard him say that he says he wants to be one of the strongest advocates for miners, yet he's on record as saying he would take federal mine safety protections back to where they were in the 1930s. We were losing 1,500 miners a year in the 1930s. He's also on record as saying that coal is one of the least desirable forms of energy. I have actually stood up for Kentucky coal, and I'm against cap and trade, and I've taken on the EPA when they've tried to foist it upon us. So I'm going to stand up for Kentucky coal, and I also think that we need to explore the new energy economy, because the jobs of the future are going to be created in the new energy economy.
Okay, now we go into the closing statements. Mr. Conway, you go first, 60 seconds.
Well, thank you, Mark, and thank you to the University of Louisville and to our ABC affiliates, and it was a pleasure to join you here tonight. You know, in about 16 days, the voters of Kentucky have an important choice to make. And elections are about choices. And we have one here between myself, who would put Kentucky first, and someone like Rand Paul, who fundamentally doesn't understand the Commonwealth of Kentucky. As Attorney General, I've gone after the scourge of drugs. Rand Paul says that drugs are an oppressing issue. As Attorney General, I've gone after crimes. And I understand, unlike Rand Paul, that sometimes nonviolent actions are indeed a crime. I am also going to stand up and protect our seniors. I'm going to stand up for Medicare. Rand Paul is for a $2,000 deductible for Medicare, and he's called Social Security a Ponzi scheme that ought to be privatized. Our seniors simply can't afford that. We have 12,000 newly disabled veterans in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Rand Paul has spoken out against the Americans with Disabilities Act. What is he going to say to them? And I will always, always stand up for workplace safety protections. I'm humbled to ask for your vote on November the 2nd.
Now you can applaud. Dr. Paul, 1 minute, closing statement.
When this debate ends, you'll notice that I will not be shaking his hand tonight. I will not shake hands with someone who attacks my religion and attacks my Christian beliefs. These are something very personal to me. My wife, my kids, we take it very personally. And I will not be associated with someone who will attack my religion. This election will be about the future of America. Who has the best vision? We will try to keep the debate on a higher tone. I hope he will leave my church, my family, and my religion out of it. But who has the best vision for America? Do you believe government is always the answer, or do you believe in the people? Do you believe in the individual entrepreneur, the individual businessman and woman to create jobs? I believe in the individual. I believe in capitalism. I believe we are the greatest nation ever known to man. We're the most humanitarian nation ever known to man. And I will defend those rights. I will keep government out of the way of business. Thank you very much for coming this evening. Thank you for your support.
Those of us at the University of Louisville and WHAS-TV would like to thank both of the candidates for putting yourself out there for public service. We'd like to tell all of you watching at home, go vote on Election Day. Now you've seen the two candidates for U.S. Senate. You've compared them head-to-head. You can go vote and make your choice on Election Day. I'd also like to thank Hope McLaughlin from the University of Louisville, the entire WHAS-TV staff, and our timer, Meg Waters, who's a freshman in the McConnell Scholars Program here at the University of Louisville. So go vote on Election Day. Thank you very much for joining us from the University of Louisville and WHAS-TV.